Hey, Dylan Kelly here, host of the Wave Break podcast. Excited to get into this episode, but first, here's a quick word from our sponsor. This episode of the Wave Break podcast is brought to you by Klaviyo, the growth marketing platform most recommended by other business leaders. Listen, in uncertain times, you need to be supporting your community and growing relationships with your customers. It's going to be appreciated. It's going to be remembered. It's going to be shared. And in good times and bad, this type of communication that's open and empathetic with your customers is key. This is a key theme that we've been talking about at Wavebreak. I've been preaching this on the podcast. And when you're communicating with your customers in this way, the best way to do this is with email. It is and always will be one of the best channels for delivering communication like this. And what I love about Klaviyo is that email is one of its core offerings. And their personalization that you can do inside Klaviyo is just, it can't be beat. And when you leverage that personalization driven by a 360 degree view of the customer, these emails are going to feel more relevant and they're going to drive even stronger relationships. And Klaviyo gets it. They're not just, you know, some company. They understand how challenging it is right now for every entrepreneur. You know, it was hard to get your business off the ground, and navigating these times is even harder. And if you're feeling overwhelmed with growing your business, know that you're not alone. Klaviyo is here to help you build relationships across any distance for your brand and create memorable and meaningful email marketing moments that last a lifetime. And that's how you build a successful e-commerce brand. And this is why I love Klaviyo so much, because they're on the same page with me and Wavebreak. Is like, we're not just about making more revenue. That's great. But what this is really about is an opportunity to create an amazing community with your customers. And the best way to do it is with email. And if you're not on Klaviyo, you gotta get on Klaviyo. Visit klaviyo.com to schedule a free trial. That's KLAVIYO.com. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Wavebreak podcast. Quick intro on today's episode. It's a little bit different. Instead of doing another solo episode, since I just did one a couple weeks ago, wanted to bring a friend of mine, David, who is the co-founder at InBeat. They're an influencer marketing agency, and they work with some really cool brands. David and I both love talking about direct-to-consumer and digitally native brands, and so we're trying something new where we break down a couple of our favorite brands or just brands we've seen, and we reverse engineer their marketing, and hopefully you get some ideas along the way. So wanted to add context for this episode. You know, more interviews to come soon, but just testing out this format. Would love to hear your thoughts on what you think, and yeah, without further ado, let's get into this very special episode.
Episode, you know, one of the D2C breakdown, where we analyze leading direct-to-consumer brands and we break down actionable insights for you. I'm David. Yes. And this is Dylan.
And I'm Dylan, founder and CEO of Wavebreak. We're an email and CRM agency for everyone from legacy enterprise brands to high growth direct-to-consumer startups that are VC backed with tons of funding to, you know, the typical direct-to-consumer startup over the last 5 years that's just like started in a garage. And love D2C, love brands. And yeah, I'm really excited for the show. David, I was looking, do you know when we started these calls? We set up like weekly calls to talk about brands.
It must have been October, man. It must have been October.
Dude, it was September.
No way. God damn.
Yeah, we've been doing this for a while.
We've done a lot of episode zeros.
A lot of episode zeros. We've had times where we've like done really well chatting about brands, and then other times it's just like, hey man, have you seen Lululemon? Crazy, right? Yeah, crazy. Or I guess the topic today would be like, wow, have you seen Peloton stock diving? Have you seen that?
No, I have not. I'm trying to stay away from the stock market right now.
Dude, so they laid off, I think it was like 30 or 40% of their sales and marketing team, something like that. Don't quote me. Yeah, and their stock just took a huge tumble. But what's interesting is even before that happened, I think they were, they were just undervalued compared to a lot of other companies. So like in retail, a lot of companies, and like, don't quote me on this, I'm not an investor. If someone's listening and they're really good at this space, or like they know the public markets of like retail really well, it seems like a lot of companies trade at like 15 to 20x EBITDA, and like even Peloton wasn't at that. And then when you get into the Allbirds and Warby Parkers, it's even crazier how they're valued. So it's really interesting. Maybe not a financial advisor, blah, blah, blah. I don't own Peloton, but like could be a good look. Yeah, I don't think they're going anywhere. Brand. Their subscribers are on a tear too. Like their CEO posted on LinkedIn
He just put a screenshot of the amount of subscriber growth up and to the right because everyone's been memeing like the stock because it just like totally fell off the cliff. And then he posts the subscriber growth of up and to the right. Like they grew really fast in the pandemic. They weren't growing as fast this year, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
I mean, 90% of households with the Peloton, right? That's their goal, I guess. Everyone's just peddling to the subscription model. I don't know, man. That's what I think that's Amazon's penetration rate. 90% of households in the States.
Really? Wow.
Amazon Prime, yeah. So yeah, today I want to bring you, Dylan, something really exciting. I was doing some digging on Ritual.com supplement company. Do you know of Ritual?
Dude, I do know Ritual. So like they're kind of like the D2C. I was actually just on Ritual.com. Like they're kind of like the epitome of a D2C brand, I would say. Yeah, like VC backed. Great totally. Branding, good packaging. But I got to their website because like even in my head, it's so funny. I was on their website today. I got to their website, Ritual.com, great domain. And I'm like, and their header is the future of health is clear. I don't know what they do. I still don't even know what Ritual does.
So let me break it down to you, man. So a couple of highlights from my side. All right. That's really amazing about Ritual. They're a masterclass in brand building. They were created in 2016. Christina Schneider, the CEO and founder of the company, created the brand Ritual. They started out with the brand, the domain name Ritual.com, which I found was absolutely amazing. There's a great story around that. I'll get to it later. They've had the same homepage, almost like very little nuances ever since they launched their real brand. So there was a
Did you go back in archive.org and like look at it?
Yeah. And then there's no brand change. So you see what's amazing about Ritual is that it was very deliberate. Like it was very deliberate from day one on how they built it. The brand was built and has been respected. And we can dive right into it, man. I'm just gonna go right into this and share with you what I've pulled out of this. A couple of interesting facts is, you know, they just controlled seed and controlled V, the honest company playbook of the time. So at the time when the company was created, clean food and transparent, you know, what's going on in our food was becoming a huge trend. And they kind of, you know, used that playbook and applied it to the supplement space. So essentially, she is an amazing storyteller. And I say that not in a buzzword way. She started this company, so she says, with this narrative of she was pregnant, looking around the house, trying to find things that, you know, what was going in these things when she was pregnant, right? So she was questioning everything that was going in the things she was eating, the toothpaste she was using, the products she was using to clean her windows, et cetera, right? And she realized, so the story goes, that there was a huge gap in the supplement space where we didn't know what went into these supplement space. So we get to that first value that you said, clear, right? They use that word. They use they're transparent and they're science-based. And they built their whole entire brand on top of that. So you can see in the product packaging, their supplement pills are transparent, their bottles are transparent, and they're super open about where their products are sourced. So if you go to the website, you can see directly where their vitamin D3 comes from and so forth, right?
Oh, wow. And you mean like city. So it's saying here, like they get their iron from Utah.
Exactly.
And they get their vitamin K2 from Norway.
And they say it's open source, brilliant positioning for the tech scene, you know? Yeah. So it's really interesting in that sense where they put forward their suppliers. So they were, the narrative was essentially an answer to the current industry at the time where there was very little transparency into this type of industry. And she came with this idea of like, hey, let's actually revolutionize that, create a narrative that goes against that. And that's where this whole thing starts. The narrative goes something like this. She was pregnant, started questioning everything around her house. She then goes and says, you know, then brings down the narrative to focus on women. She says that women only need 9 nutrients to actually supplement from their what they're missing in their diet. And she singles that to a single product. So 2016, they launched with a single product called Essentials for Women, which I find is an absolutely brand genius move. It seems so obvious, but the targeting is baked in. We know what this does. It's like, you know, it's like what you need. And I just found it brilliant that they started with one product that was hyper targeted like that one, and that she used, you know, her platform and what she was building in terms of narrative to promote that. So really interesting. And then she goes into just, you know, listen to a bunch of podcast interviews. She is fantastic at keeping the narrative tight. And that's something that, you know, a lot of D2C brand owners or operators or marketers seem to forget, right, to create an airtight narrative that you just rinse and repeat everywhere you go. She's been on tons of podcasts. She's been in tons of articles, tons of editorial, and the narrative is always the same. I was pregnant. I built this brand. Here's my story. Super relatable, stuff that the media loves. And that's just a huge thing that she did amazingly well, and that Ritual as a whole did amazingly well. Keeping that narrative airtight opened them so many doors. She was featured in the New York Times, Wired, so many publications. Just a fun fact, when you type into Google her name and then pregnant, and then you put that in quotation marks so that you have exact results, there's 10,200 results of stories that mention her. And so you can see that she just used that as kind of like what I'd call cheap growth, using the editorial landscape, giving them the story they want, and then writing it. You know, female founder, she can use that. Then, you know, transparent, you know, science-based kind of approach to nutriments. And then, you know, she just used these narratives. And then the story she has, relatable mom, I was a mom, I created this business. It killed it. She absolutely destroyed it. And I think a lot of brands can learn from that, keeping an airtight narrative. That's like kind of like the narrative part. What do you think of that, man? I found that super interesting.
Dude, I think it is interesting, especially if you think about today's market, because it used to be, first we had Uber for X, then we had D2C for X. So, you know, it's like you look around your house. I feel like that was the first version of direct to consumer. It was like, you look around your house, or like you're walking through the aisles of the store and you're like, oh, like, you know, like these brands seem old, like let me make an online version. But what's cool about Rituals is a little bit deeper than that, similar story. But then I do like the, you know, I like the idea of, I don't know. I like the idea of a narrative. I think it's important. I don't think enough brands have it, or it's too wishy-washy. I do think, I mean, what are your thoughts on how they communicate that on their website? Because I was on their website today. I looked at a few 100 million plus revenue direct-to-consumer brands, and they all kind of have these, like, so like, for example, Ritual or Athletic Greens, like you get to the website and they're like, the future of health is clear. Or like, welcome to the nutritionalist environment movement. It's like, what is that? But if you told me that story better, or like, for people who, like, did you know, like, most daily vitamins have chemical, like, it's kind of like, you know, the old aluminum deodorant thing?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, did you know there's aluminum deodorant? It's like, holy crap, I didn't even realize that. It's like, ours doesn't. I feel like if they simplified their positioning and better communicated that on their website, like, they have strong brand now, so it's not as important. But I feel like at some point, these brands also lose their roots a little bit once they get at scale. Cause like, I read their website. I still didn't even really know what they did until you explained it to me.
But no one lands on the homepage, right? No one lands on the homepage, right? The traffic is sent to landing pages, and then these landing pages have to be conversion centric. But yeah,
well, if you're at scale though, but you're doing, like, let's say you're doing over the top streaming, or you're even doing, I'm sure Ritual does out of home, maybe not, but like they do billboards and stuff. People are going to hit ritual.com, or people are going to click
absolutely.
There. I just think they could do, I mean, even their PDP, like their PDPs are okay. And like, shout out to Ritual Team. I think it's a great brand, great product. I just think like they do have an awesome narrative, and it's not like clear enough, quick enough. And I think that's going to help so many brands. Like, if the quicker and clearer you get about the value of your product, the better. And I think they have a great story. I think they could just communicate it even better.
Yeah, they could definitely. And I think that, but they do a lot of communications off the site, but completely agree with you. There's definitely some things that could be,
I feel like site real estate is so underutilized by D2C brands. Like,
I agree.
Everyone has the same site and they're like, oh, let's conversion optimize the button or the PDP or whatever. It's like, actually, like, what about the messaging? You know, I think that's what's interesting about you and me building agencies, is it's the most commoditized business possible. Like, tomorrow I could start a competitor to Envy and be like, hi, I'm an influencer marketing agency. But being able to differentiate with messaging is really the only way you can do it. I think brands have a lot to learn there, but Ritual is very cool. Interesting. They started with ritual.com. How did they get that?
Yeah, I'm going to get right to that. Right next, you know, we just see how she attached Ritual to her own brand. And I think what Katarina did here, that's amazing, is that she built her brand through her personal brand without attaching her brand to her personal brand, which I find is absolutely amazing, right? Without actually making it, you know, Kardashian, right? Something terrible happens, right? And then they have to shut down the Instagram profiles of all their brands, right? Why?
Right.
Because they are attached to the brands. They are personally like it's a huge asset, but it's a huge downfall. So I think that she did that amazingly well, using kind of her network or approach to the brand, using her person, her persona, but you know, not attaching it directly to the brand all that much. So she can sell Ritual tomorrow and there's no problem. Who's going to buy that if she's not there as the CEO anymore, right? So super great idea. So back to my first point that I teased out in the beginning, right? They started out of the gate. They absolutely crushed it. They started out with the domain name ritual.com. They started out with a heavy branded playbook of like, what is our brand going to look like? They thought about this. This was very deliberate. From day one, they knew exactly what the brand was going to look like once they released all these visual assets. So the way she built, she got the domain, okay? She contacted the owner of ritual.com. The guy wasn't, guy or girl, I don't know who had it, wasn't willing to sell for the price she was willing to pay. When she talked to him, she actually found out the guy wanted the website jolt.com for his business, but he couldn't get it. So she actually contacted the owner of jolt.com, offered him cash and equity into Ritual to get the domain and trade it afterwards with the owner of ritual.com. So that's out of the gate, okay? We have no, they don't even have
Jolt,
a brand.
Like JOLT.com?
Yeah, the ritual.com was like a gaming weird website before.
And they gave up equity for ritual.com, the domain.
Yeah. No, wow. No, they gave up equity in the Ritual company. Exactly. That's how brand is important to this. You can just, it transpires, man. Like you, when you start studying their brand, you're like, okay, transparency is at the core of their brand. Well, oh wow, their whole brand is about transparency, right? And then they're trying to get the habitual kind of reflex in place. They call their brand Ritual. You know, it's like they're very deliberate in terms of how they created the brand. They started with a single product targeted towards women, you know, 9 essential nutrients that you need to supplement your diet. Super simple. They started out with these transparent pills. And if you go and look at the oldest post on their Instagram, like the packaging is almost identical to what it was, which is absolutely astonishing when you think about it.
Dude, that is impressive.
Yeah, that a brand can build to this level and keep its whole brand throughout the entire journey, I found was like, wow, I did not expect to find that to be honest.
What's her background? What did she do before?
So she's got a background in investment, economics, and mathematics. So she's really a prolific woman. She's just good. And, you know, I think she launched on TechCrunch Disrupt and had an angel round of 1.3 million at the beginning. So essentially one thing.
Do you know what they're valued at today?
I have no clue what their valuation is. I know they raised up to this point $40 million and they have no sign of slowing down. I think there's some issues with the space as a whole. I can get into that later down the line. It's getting very, you know, it's not a hard space to get into, and people can micro niche down, which makes it hard for brands like Ritual to keep growing at the pace that they wish they could be growing at. But then I did an analysis at the end, so we can get into that at the end. So actionable insights for, you know, anyone working in the D2C space. Stand for something. So, you know, the narrative here is, hey, big companies are not doing this transparently. We want to be transparent and we want to be scientific about how we do things. And then she talks about, you know, in some of her interviews, I listened to 2 or 3 where she talks about this like gene predisposition that women have that they can't absorb XYZ, not sure what it is. And then 1/3 of women can't absorb XYZ nutrient. And then that the solution to that is XYZ2 nutrient, which is what they include in Ritual, right? So science is at the core. They have a VP of science, right, in their company. They communicate a very scientific narrative. People that are more aware of what they're buying. So they stand for that since day one. So, you know, I remember, Dylan, like episode 012, right? The 12-0 episode, we talked about this swim trunk company that, you know, it was made from ocean plastic, right? So that's what standing for something is. Find something that you can stand around, craft a narrative around it, build an amazing looking brand. I can't understress that enough. We work with a great of good looking D2C brands, and it makes it so much easier. Your influencer marketing is easier. Your conversions are higher. Your media contacts are going to be easier. Everything is easier if you look like amazing. And that's very important. Build a brand that's freaking fantastic. It just makes the whole process that much easier. Build a story into that. What do you stand for? What's the narrative you're going against? I like going against something that's more classical, and then just positioning yourself against that. And then using those two assets to just open doors everywhere, right? Get on media. And then that's kind of like what I get from this thing is, you know, just build a brand that's consistent. What do you think about that? I just love your thoughts.
Yeah, I think Ritual is really cool. I like, I'm scrolling through their Facebook ad library now too, and they really lead, you're right, like they lead with like, oh, men might be missing this in their diet, and you're like, hey, or they're like our team of scientists. So
yeah,
no, I think it's a really good point. And I think it also shows like they're probably still doing well right now, and they'll probably continue to do well because we're moving into this next phase of digitally native direct to consumer, where it's not just, oh, you have a great product and then you grow, or oh, you have great marketing and you grow. You really need to be dialed in across everything. So like every channel marketing, like you said, like influencer, if you have a great product, like it makes your influencer product, your influencer creative look better. If you have a great narrative, it makes email content easier. And
their transparent pill is so iconic now, right? For anyone that
I mean, knows that's genius.
This,
yeah, like that's like genius. The ultimate. I feel like sign of like transparency. I mean, it's literally clear. Very interesting.
But they hired this one girl, man. What's her name again? Michelle Matar, I think her name is. She is absolutely killer. It seems she built this brand up from the ground up. And then she's just like an amazing brand builder. She built a bunch of other brands and participated in the process of other brand building. She absolutely did a stellar
job. Which brand?
Home Essentials,
practice that
for whatever life brings, the white space.
All kinds, common read.
If you go and see her, she's amazing. She's absolutely stellar at what she does. And it shows that Ritual was built with this deliberate kind of mindset. That the transparent pill is genius for content on Instagram. It's so Instagrammable. It's amazing, man. They did a killer job on that. Let me just keep rolling through this. We've got another thing that I loved is the fact that they started with a single product that says it all, Essentials for Women, and a brand name that says it all, Ritual, right? So, hey, use this thing every day, you know, Essentials, and then
dude, it's great.
Yeah.
I like the one SKU thing too, but what's interesting about one SKU, there's actually a few one SKU brands popping off, and it might be good for a different episode, like mudwater.com. They pretty much have one SKU. They're doing really well, but the key to making one SKU work is like recurring subscription that people actually need, like daily vitamin people need on a monthly basis. Yeah. Mud water, coffee alternative, people are going to drink on a daily basis. Or you do the Caraway model where you have a high dollar amount product. Like they sell a $400 set of pans, and like that's how they make today's. Because like you either need like that recurring or like a higher AOV 100%. to make ads work. But yeah, I agree with you. I think it's great.
100% agree with you. And the fact is that when they started out, and they still do this most likely, they the first picture of their product that they showed on their Instagram in 2016, there's like, you know, their packaging, and in the packaging, there's this little calendar that you can check off every day you took your Ritual supplements. So they really tried to build the habit into the product. And that's amazing. And you know, I'm well aware that a lot of people were probably using these calendars because it's just like that one thing. It feels good to check it off. You know, there's a bunch of people that do that. And the people that do that, you're creating habits in them, which makes it amazing. So what I want to do now is actually jump into the now. Like this is essentially, I wanted to share like how they got, you know, kind of like the cheap growth, I'd call it, you know, how they got like the low hanging fruits, built the narrative, used the media to kind of build that story. Now I want to jump into acquisition marketing. So they've done a lot of editorial marketing. So they've been partnering up with a lot of editorials, affiliate deals-ish. You know, they have an affiliate program, but it's closed. So they don't have an open affiliate program. Let me explain that. They had one back in the days, but they seem to have closed it off in 2018. Couldn't find too much data on that, but I'm guessing that it, like, you know, running an affiliate program is extremely hard, and affiliates are always going to over promise on your brand. And for Ritual, it might have not been a good brand play, but they do still have affiliates with Healthline, WebMD.
Yeah, go ahead. Or it's probably just like the, you know, originally they're like, yeah, anyone can be an affiliate because they're a small brand. And they're like, hey, we actually want to control these relationships. Cause you're right. Like they're literally ranked. If you Google best women's multivitamin, they come up number one on Healthline.
Exactly. And that's
which is great. I bet that's crushing. Cause you can cause then once you have that, you can even send your paid traffic to it.
Exactly. But what they do, and their payout used to be something like this. It was 60 day cookie and 75% of the initial sale. So that's no that's way. Pretty crazy, right? That's like if you visit my website and you buy after. Yeah. So like that's the lesson.
So for perspective, it's $30. It's $30 to $35. If you are a man over 50, it costs $35. If you're not, it is $30.
But if they upsell you into a 6-month subscription, right? You know, then
I'm going through the funnel right now. I added the multivitamin cart.
Exactly.
And they're upselling me on the protein.
Yeah. So great stuff. They closed down. You looked at that, right? So interesting fact, Dylan. That's amazing. 4 of their 5 top AdWords keywords are branded. Okay. We have Ritual Vitamins with 55,000 monthly searches, Ritual Prenatal, 14,000 monthly searches, Ritual, 57,000
monthly. People are going to the homepage.
but they're going. They're like, it's interesting when you Google that, they end up like Google Shopping on the right, AdWords at the top. They're being overbid by all their competitors, right? So very little people actually end up.
So they don't even care though.
Yeah, I mean they do.
They're not even advertising on their own keywords, or do they?
Yeah, they do. Oh yeah, they do. They do. That's like that's most of their AdWord traffic is actually on their branded keywords, which is super fascinating. And then they have this one keyword, right? Best prenatal vitamins, right? Amazing thing. 58,000 monthly searches. They rank. They have Healthline as the first result, who's like a top, you know, article, and they're first in that article, and they have an affiliate offer with them. They have Google Shopping on the right with like thousands upon thousands of reviews. And at the top, they have their own, you know, AdWords there. So they're absolutely dominating the estate on the homepage of Google for that keyword. Whether you end up on Healthline, WebMD, or freaking their AdWords, you're always ending up at their website, right? So amazing stuff. On another level, what they're doing amazingly well right now, and I think there's a lot to learn for direct-to-consumer brands at this point, and I want your opinion on this, but they're rolling out different multivitamin products and they're sub-niching it down. So you went through their Facebook ads library. So they have this like post-menopause, you know, women over 50 multivitamin. They have this teenage kids, you know, multivitamin that they target moms. They have this prenatal you know, multivitamin that they target women with. They have this men vitamin that they're going by sub segment, and they're using micro influencers, micro creators to create UGC around that. And they run ads around it. And that's fucking phenomenal. They're doing amazingly well on that. And they're just very good at joining people's narrative that's going on in their head. What I mean by that, like, let me just pull an example from the copywriting. Finally, a multivitamin you'll actually enjoy taking, essential for women 50 plus, is designed to help support your nutrient needs post-menopause, expertly developed with 8 key nutrients, all in 2 minty fresh pills. Answers, is it for me? I'm a woman over 50. I've had menopause. Yes, that's for me. Does it taste bad? Because I, you know, well, no worries. Minty fresh pills.
Yeah.
I've had menopause. Does that change something? We've got you back, right? This covers very well the narrative that's going on in these people's heads. And you can clearly see that they're really good at creating new product lines and aligning the whole marketing strategy behind each of these product lines. Definitely something to learn. Use micro influencers, go get content, create content that resonates with your end user. If you're targeting women between the age of 29 to 34, get women between the age of 29 to 34. If these women are into yoga, get women that are into yoga. If these women are into pottery, get women. You get the gist, right? But just like make it relatable. If you see someone you can relate to, very strong strategy. I recommend that everyone listening right now goes and check out ritual.com's Facebook ads library. There's tons of gold mines in there. Lots to be learned. I had a blast doing it.
And now a quick break for a quick word from our sponsor, Okendo. Okendo is the new standard in customer reviews for high-growth Shopify brands. We use them with our clients, and they work with over 4,000 of the fastest-growing Shopify retailers like Skims, Nomad, and Buck Mason to help them leverage their most powerful asset, their customers. Okendo gives brands all the tools they need to capture and showcase customer-generated content like product reviews and ratings, photos and videos, and Q&A. Plus, they have an awesome integration with Klaviyo that makes it easy to do cool stuff like send review request emails and target shoppers based on review content. And now that it's that time of year again, when Black Friday and Cyber Monday are top of mind, Okendo is offering a 90-day free trial to help e-commerce brands ramp holiday conversion without having to worry about increased subscription costs. If you sign up before October 31st, you pay nothing until 2022. It's really a no-brainer to me, and don't worry, you won't be forced into any expensive annual contracts after your trial is up. They offer super affordable monthly subscriptions starting at $29. So you can make the most out of this holiday season with a little help from Okendo. Visit okendo.io and start your free trial today. That's okendo.io. Thanks, Okendo, for sponsoring the show.
One thing that I find really interesting, Dylan, is, you know, the fact that Ritual created an approach to vitamins that's one size fits all, and that's against the narrative,
gives
the opportunity to a company like Care Of, which is a company I absolutely love that's in the same space, to actually create a narrative that's against Ritual's narrative. Let me break that down. Care Of says, hey guys.
Because Care Of is the personalized, like, it's the same as Curology with like the personalized skincare. It's such a great pitch. I think it works so well because they're like, my skin is different. I am different.
And Ritual's like, hey, you know, you have these 8 vitamins that you need. And Care Of is like, no. You are different. You know, you need
from
7
the logistics
of these
perspective, I would much rather be Ritual. Like Ritual can probably grow so much faster.
But I mean, dude, like, I mean, Care Of is definitely a brand I'm going to break down on another one of these podcasts because they are amazing and they are like logistically great. They built everything on personalization and ambassadors, and they did that like amazingly well. There's definitely a huge case study there. And then another thing is a single word domain name is underrated. Like if you can invest $100,000 in a single word domain name, I don't even know if you can do that anymore. But if you can invest money in a single word domain name, the authority it builds for you is so high. Like we got an email from public.com at one point, and I didn't even know what public.com was, but I took them seriously out of the gate. Why? Because public.com, nothing, enough said, right?
Yeah.
And there's so much power. And then like the example I have here is like, imagine Katarina, the CEO of this company, reaching out to a journalist from the email katarina@ritual.com versus the email katarina@ritualvitamins.co, right? What gets the
right more? Right, ritualvitamins.co. Like,
And then I think Katarina nailed that down perfectly. She even gave up equity. I'm not sure what the percentage is, but it just goes to show you how much thought she gave into a single word domain. And I think that's just fantastic. And the final takeaway is like brand amplifies everything. Like it looks like a soft investment. You know, if you're performance driven and it looks like a silly investment in many ways, but it makes your SEO easier. It makes your conversions easier. It makes your retention easier. It makes your referrals easier. It makes it easier to onboard new ambassadors. It makes it easier to onboard new influencers. And more importantly, the quality of everything here is going to go up. Better influencers will want to work with you. Better ambassadors will want to be part of your program because no one wants to shill a crappy product to their audience. So that's kind of like what I pulled from there. And I think that's really interesting. So any thoughts, definitely, comments? Man, I had a blast doing this, by the way. It was fantastic.
I bought wavebreak.com. Still haven't used it. It's just a redirect. But definitely, also it's easier to say com, like .com, ritual.com. But no, I totally agree. And it also sets the standard. Like you can see that their brand is followed across the board. And it's like, we invested in our brand since day one, even in the domain ritual.com. That's the minimum standard. So our Facebook ads have to be dialed. Our influencer has to be dialed. Our affiliate has to be dialed. Not everyone can be an influencer. We want a strategically partner. Yeah, I think it's well done because it's kind of like you have a great product, you have a great brand. The marketing is really fuel on the fire for that. You know, because even like non-influencers are going to take that product and it's so cool that they're going to tell their friend about it in their living room. Yeah. They're going to put it on there. They only have 75 followers on Instagram, but that, that mom is going to post it to her Instagram and be like, love this, because you know she wants to be an influencer or whatever. So yeah, I think that's a really great breakdown. Mine is definitely not going to be that in depth.
Okay, no worries. And yeah, sorry, I had a blast, dude. I just went down the rabbit hole. I found tons of podcasts. I was like, okay, let's break this down. Actually, it's a good, yeah.
Yeah, go it's ahead. Interesting they went into protein also. That's interesting second entry. What would be good for another episode? Maybe I'll do this one is collagen, dude. Collagen is just popping off. It's insane. But I'm surprised based on their audience, it sounds like it skews female. Like they don't have more, pushing into, I don't know. Collagen is just like trending right now. So I'm surprised.
I don't know. They're probably going to be adding these SKUs. I think
I also don't really know who uses collagen. I just, think that's the demographic. I don't know. I'm not an expert. All right.
Yeah, and you know, if collagen is sketchy from a scientific point of view, then Ritual has no kind of, you know, I don't know. I'm just brainstorming here, but they're trying to get into the spaces where they can, like, their brand is worth something. If they start doing, you know, things that are non-scientific, then they lose that appraisal.
Yeah, and it's great because, like, that's a pretty thick moat because it's a pain in the butt to do. So, like, you're not going to be competing against dropshippers. You'll have legit competition, but, like, for you to say, oh, your number one dermatologist recommended, or, like, number one pediatrician recommended, or whatever, like, that's a great thing to flex. I got a brand to break down today.
What is it?
Have you heard of Touchland?
No, I have not. No.
Okay, check this out. So this is a really interesting company. Talks about the D2Cification sort of everything. I was a little bit skeptical at first. So Touchland is like direct to consumer premium hand sanitizer. So like their website, funny enough, has the word Ritual on it. It says, find your Ritual, meet the world's first rejuvenating hand sanitizer mist.
That's amazing, dude.
And then you go to buy it. Let me get mine. Let me click get mine. It's $16 for like a little hand thing of sanitizer. And I'm like, their site looks great. It's their products look awesome. Like they have like a citrus scent and it's like orange and it looks cool. I don't even know if I'm saying it right. Like I'm saying Touchland, but it's very D2C looking site. They have a lot of press and I had to dig into it because I'm like, what are they doing? So my first initial thought was this is going to be a COVID smash grab. Like they launched this on like March 12th and then they're like, hey, let's run it up. Is that your initial thought too? What are your initial thoughts when you see a brand like this?
Dude, honestly, when I look at this, I'm like, wow, like I am clearly not the target consumer, but this is amazing, man. They even like my first thought when I clicked on their products is what the heck? They have Afterpay. Like they have Afterpay set up, right?
You can on a hand sanitizer. Yeah.
So it's like, dude,
it's
like,
$16.
Yeah, but they're like, they allow you to bundle it up like crazy. Yeah, dude. I think when I look at Shop All Products, right? And I see the Build Your Bundle picture. I see their origin. Like, you know, they seem like they went through a rebrand and they just, you know, they're like, okay, we need to rebrand this thing. And then they just did it. And yeah, that's my thought process on this. But how are they doing? Do you know?
Dude, so yeah, I had to look into it. My first thought is like, okay, this is like COVID smash grab. Like somebody's bored during COVID. Like, okay, we're going to make hand sanitizer company and it's going to be, but we're going to make it like cool and fun. But they actually were founded in 2018 and they had been working on, I forget if they were working on similar products or something. I feel like it was like one of those things behind the scenes they had been doing for a while. And then they launched as a brand in 2018. And in 2019, they passed over $1 million in revenue from hand sanitizer. So within their first year. So no, they founded in 2018. Okay, in 2019, they did $1 million in revenue. So within a year, they were at $1 million in revenue, which is pretty crazy. And then like what's even crazier is like the real model isn't really direct-to-consumer.com sales. They're in 1,500 stores around the country.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which makes a lot more sense. So I think where this is and why like I don't really know about it is it's in like premium stores. So like, for example, oh yeah, so it's in Bloomingdale's, it's in Neiman Marcus, it's in Ulta. So my guess is, and I don't spend a lot of time in those stores, but my guess is this is like in the line as like, you know, when you're waiting in the long line, there's like this fancy premium hand sanitizer and I bet it crushes. Like I could see my sister buying this. I could see my grandma buying this because it's like cool. And then they also like talk about how it's, you know, talk about brand narrative. They're like, oh, like we're building a better hand sanitizer because most have chemicals. And so this is for, it doesn't have chemicals. It's like natural and keeps your hands soft and clean and doesn't smell like you just like dumped your hand in like alcohol.
Wow, dude, they're running. Yeah. And then their value prop seems to be like hand sanitizer that keeps your hand moisturized, right? That's the value prop.
And that's amazing. Doesn't smell like chemicals. Yeah. It's like the dechemicalization of everything. So like I even looked at it like, So they sold 250,000 units in the first week of COVID.
Wow.
Crazy.
And then they probably ran out. So, you know,
oh, I'm sure supply chain was a mess, but like, yeah, you know, traffic was through the roof. But like, what I thought was even more interesting, it was like, okay, like, let's say you're building this. They were really at the right place in the right time. How big can you really build a hand sanitizer company? You know, you look into it, like Purell during the pandemic, the main, I don't know if they're number one, but like when I think of hand sanitizer, I think of Purell. Yeah. I don't know if it's the same in Canada.
Yeah, it but is like, by far. But
dude, they went from producing 1 million units a quarter to 1 million units a day. And they did 1.5 billion year over year through late February last year. So like you can build a billion in revenue hand sanitizer company. Granted, that's in a pandemic. That was like 568% year over year growth. But I mean, yeah, you could build 100 million revenue hand sanitizer company. And I think it's like, even like simple products like this, I feel like are overlooked, but like if you can think outside the box of like things you use every day that you don't really think of, you know, think about how many granola bars there are. Like even Clif Bar, it's like, oh, Clif Bar is healthy. Clif Bar has 21 grams of sugar in it.
Dude, so Clif Bar is healthy if you're rock climbing or doing sports or, you know, you're like, you know,
it's like healthy compared to like Nature Valley that's like glued together. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about?
It's crazy. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fuck, yeah, I just thought this was really fascinating. And then one other thing I think is really cool about what they do, they're donation props. So like, because they're, you know, D2C, like they obviously have like, you know, and they're like a socially, I don't even know what to call it, socially aware, socially active, socially conscious brand. They have an interesting model on giving back. So instead of doing like a percent that just goes to charity or something, they donate 5% of their profits to send their sanitizing solutions to schools in the US. So I just thought that was interesting because it's not like, oh, we donate to XYZ charity. It's like we take 5% of our profit, reinvest in our product and send it back. So it's almost like Tom's in a way, but not exactly. And I think there's, you know, instead of having to find a charity that may or may not be legit, like you can even take your own products and like donate them to people. You can launch a DC backpack brand for every backpack you donate to someone who needs one, you know?
And what I love about these things, it just opens like, that's the thing people underestimate is, you know, like when you give to a local school, right? Whatever happens, you can get media coverage there. Media, you know, it just like doing good is usually a marketing channel that makes sense. Like it makes sense because people are going to be talking about you. They're going to be, you know, you can get article covered. You could get local press coverage and so forth. Right? These things add up. Like, and it's just, it makes it easier to open doors, right? Hey, we give this much. And then, you know, would you like to write a piece with us? Here's a high level overview of what we are about. And then boom, you can open these doors.
Yeah. And then like back to product design, because I think that's really important. It's a unique product design and it's gone viral on TikTok. So it has over 10 million likes on TikTok. It's all over Instagram. And I think that speaks to it too, is like, if you have a cool product that people want to show off, like if you get this product, it looks really cool in your hand, same with the Ritual Vitamin, you want to show people it. Even another company who does this well is like Bridge Wallet. They have a cool wallet.
Yeah,
so it's
exactly.
Viral in its own nature.
Yeah. Bridge Wallet is an amazing, Bridge Wallet, you know, is harder to comprehend. They're a nice piece of engineering in many ways, right? It's a complex product to build. I mean, once you've built it, you know, it's once you've seen what it looks like, it's easy. But you know, for brands, like there's so many ways that brands can leverage their packaging, the way they you know, that the everything looks to make it social media attractive.
Definitely. I mean, like, because you can make it viral just by the way it looks.
Yeah.
Without being a fidget spinner or like something that's actually trendy. And
bonus points if your product is extremely visual and social media are going to make a lot more sense for you. But if you can't figure out
creative.
But yeah. And if you can't figure out, you know, like a way to like, you know, I can just think of like, you know, taking the transparent pill approach of Ritual and applying it to tons of other product lines. Like that's something that you can easily take, you know, detergents, right? You could imagine pods, you know, and then you could have a visual effect of the pod, you know, whatever. There's a way to do it there, super transparent. There's many, many ways that you could apply that to other kind of consumer goods that you can see out there. Just it's I think a lot of the learnings you can do in e-commerce come from parallel industries, but we focus a lot on the competitors rather than other industries that are running very different playbooks, but you can learn a lot from them.
Yeah, definitely. No, I totally agree with that. It's like, yeah, we look at everybody else and think I can do that. Even just looking and seeing how like people typically interact with influencers and like content and social, like I think we build a lot for marketers and like, you know, bosses. So it's like, hey, I have to get approval on this new website landing page. And it's like, okay, by the time all the edits get in, it gets down to the future of health is clear or whatever their thing is. Besides like, you know, most multivitamins have ingredients that you don't really need.
Yeah, but they're very FDA regulated though, these things, right? On Facebook
That's true.
Ads. Yeah.
Well, no. Well, they say things in their Facebook ads I think they could put on their lander, but like I feel like that's like unused real estate for like direct consumer brands. Like, here's the problem, here's our solution. Like the chemical free hand sanitizer.
Yeah, I think as brands get bigger, they try to say less. Because they don't want to close doors, right? I feel there's that thing where a brand gets too big. It's like its messaging is lost in total abstraction. Whereas then if you're starting, you know, like if you're starting out and like you're making a couple mil a year, right? And then you have a brand like the Touchland, it's like, yeah, you should definitely like a hand sanitize, right. Like find your
focus
ritual.
More on the hero product. Yeah. I see what you mean. But I think you could still do it at scale. Like they could just like talk better about like being transparent around, you know, the transparency across all the products.
Agreed. I think you're right. There's definitely some space there for.
Well, what else is interesting is like, what if you took the, like traditional approach, you know, you look at some of these big holding companies who sell, you know, like Nabisco, right? They've got Oreo. Like Oreo only launches other Oreos though. So like, is there an option for a direct consumer brand to have different product lines within it that are known, that you market the product line really aggressively, but then they're part of a bigger holding company? That might be
definitely
something to look into to see if that exists.
I mean, Care of was bought by Bayer's, right? Who were they?
Yeah, Bayer, pharmaceutical Bayer company. I think it's interesting how like, okay, Oreo, Nutter Butter are like two cookies owned by Nabisco. They both have very different marketing strategies, but it's like the same company.
But
I feel like that's another option that nobody does.
But they're shipped to grocery stores in the same trucks. Right.
Okay,
I think
that makes sense.
I think that creates like a huge advantage for holdings of CPG brands that are being sold in, you know, Walmart, Target, whatever. Right. It just makes sense for them to have a holding of multiple brands because they already have supply chain. So they can
and
bring
the relationships.
In a new brand and like, hey, guys, like, you know, distribute this for us. You know, like,
well, there's an idea. I think we'll see this over the next 5 years is like people doing the same thing again and again and again. Because like once you have the playbook, you can just run it. So like, what's the stop ritual from just instead of launching other product lines, like they sell the company and then they do it again. There's a lot of stories that I want to talk to about that I know that.
I think we can wrap it up here. I think that was a really good.
I got a fun fact before you end. Do you know who one of the first investors in Chipotle was?
No. Who?
McDonald's.
Yeah, dude. I remember.
Oh, you did know that?
That's crazy. Yeah, I know.
I did not know this. They backed them when they only had like less than 15 restaurants, I think. And they sold their shares back in 2006. And today Chipotle shares are like over $1,000. But I had no idea that Chipotle was like McDonald's. We should do an episode just on McDonald's because they invested $50 million into Chipotle.
That's just
And their investment grew to 90% of the company by 2005.
Wow.
They owned 90% of McDonald's and then they sold it.
And can you imagine though, like with the crises that they had, like Chipotle had a huge crisis, right? With what's it called?
Lettuce.
Salmonella.
And there's another one, E. coli.
Yeah, E. coli. There you go. I think they got two. And then like for McDonald's to be tied to that, like that doesn't make sense. I don't know when they sold, but there might have been like some like, okay, we're liquidating this. Like by no means. Because imagine McDonald's stock plummet once, like, you know, this Chipotle thing goes out. They're like the main investor. Yeah. I don't know when I'm just
well, it's just interesting because they're like total opposites, you know.
Yeah, but McDonald's, like any corporation, doesn't really care about, you know, like, for all we know, McDonald's has investments in, you know, salad green companies.
Well, did you know they acquired a SaaS company a couple of years ago?
No way.
Dude, do you know Dynamic Yield?
No, I don't. That's amazing.
It's A/B testing. Dude, they bought this and they just sold it to MasterCard, I think. But yeah, it's like A/B testing software, and like a lot of e-commerce use it. I think we have some clients who use it, but like Yeti, PacSun, Brooklinen, like
how much they have they acquired for, you know? I'm curious.
I think it's $300 million.
Okay, so pretty hefty sum, right?
Okay. Yeah.
But I mean, like, I'm guessing, like, how did it go on internally? They're like, hey, we're paying like a couple.
Nobody really knows why. They ended that year with like $4.2 billion in free cash flow, but then they only bought it for $300 million. And everyone's like, oh, I don't know why. But yeah. Apparently they're like, oh, we need this software to like serve our 68 million daily customers in the drive-through window or something. Like,
wow.
I have no idea.
They were one of the big ass customers of this software, right? And they're like, okay, well, it makes sense for us to acquire this.
Well, like, is it a stock play? They're like, oh, we need software as part of what we do. So if we do that, we boost our stock.
No clue. Know. There must be some interesting writings on there.
We should do an episode on McDonald's.
Yeah, we should. We should. It's a great company. They've done great.
The founder part two.
All right. So yeah, how do we wrap this up, man? It was, I love this thing. This was fun. Yeah, we can do this a lot. I just love breaking down brands. It's just interesting, man. There's many good brands out there, lots to learn from them. I think it's going to make us better marketers as well as we do this, for sure. I learned a ton from this. And yeah.
Yeah, me too. I think it's funny that I was on ritual.com today, like another website. I'm like, yeah, wow. Their header copy is pretty vague. And then you talked about it today. I think this was good. This was we've done a lot of practice ones of these, and this was definitely our best.
Yeah. Let us know what you think. If you have any comments, feel free to email us david@inbeat.co. And where can people reach you?
Dylan, from Wavebreak. You can find Wavebreak at wavebreak.com, and you can get on our newsletter at wavebreak.co/join, or you can listen to the Wavebreak podcast, which this is probably going to air on anyway, at wavebreakpodcast.com.
Yeah. And then we're going to be, you know, looking for a name, building a caster, and then just go.
But when we go live, it'll have a name, right? So yeah, keep an eye out for more episodes like this, but yeah, also under a different podcast feed.
Yeah, we need to find an SEO friendly name. That's where we're at. Need to find a
name. Yeah. I love that. Yo, can I put this on the podcast? Can I put this
on
the
podcast? Yeah, of course. Put that
before we even have a name for this segment, it's going to go on my podcast. So you guys get the beta
episode. Let's see how many, like, let's see if people have feedback, and, you know, that would be great. I think this is cool. So let's stop. Cheers.
Later. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Wavebreak podcast. If you're not subscribed on iTunes or Spotify, go hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on future episodes. And if you're not on our email list, go sign up at wavebreak.co/join. You'll join other e-commerce leaders at brands like Skims, Cartier, and Walmart, and thousands more, learning exactly what's working in e-commerce right now. You won't want to miss it. Sign up at wavebreak.co/join. It's free. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Wavebreak podcast. I hope you have a wonderful day. Thank you.